In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And welcome. This is the Energemetra 6 podcast. We are on episode 31, and we are actually not going to be live next week, which is unusual for us. We will try to release an episode as usual, but I'm going to be traveling, and so things aren't going to work out for us to do a live show, but we're hoping to release episode 32 on time. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, Luke. Welcome, Mel. Oldest and Third are here for, I think this is chapter 8. Is this chapter 8? Yeah, we're on chapter 8. So real quick before we get going, let me hit our V for V. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value for value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. All right, and with that, we are into the Veil of Mysteries, Chapter 8.
His arrival will break the deception of old, laying bare to the void the roots of ratting.
The first prophecy of the Bright Star. After they left the collision field, it took an hour to get back to Lighthouse Station. When they arrived, they docked at their previous berth and again waited for the docking mechanisms to complete their seal. As they moved to debark, Nate traded a glance with Jesse and said, "You should all stay here, except Jesse. We'll go see whether we're welcome anymore." Andrew looked at him askance.
"Is that wise?"
Nate read agreement with Andrew in the eyes of several of the others, but he just shook his head. "What do you think they're going to do?" Andrew didn't look convinced, but the rest of the little group didn't follow when Nate turned and pushed himself toward the airlock. As he hit the button to open it, he turned back to them, his mouth quirked wryly. "One way or another, I doubt this will take long." When Nate emerged from the airlock into the station, there was again a greeting party. This time, however, it was two of the council members with no crowd or fanfare. Elders Rebus and Eden stood stiffly, their backs straight, and Nate couldn't help but feeling that they were looking down their noses at him from the very instant he left the airlock. Nate also couldn't help noticing the two security guards that loomed behind them, their faces blank. "Nate," Rebus said, stepping forward. "The council would ask that you and any of your companions who wish to come back aboard Lighthouse Station accompany us to a full council session." Nate's eyebrows rose and he frowned, but he nodded thoughtfully. "I can do that." Immediately upon following Nate out of the airlock, Jesse saw Rebus and Eden and scowled.
"Are you two making trouble again?"
He looked over at Nate.
"I wondered if I should have stayed here. Just to see that they couldn't do anything stupid."
Rebus smirked. "The council's convened and waiting. Best come along, Jesse." Nate spent the 10-minute walk in melancholic contemplation. He had enjoyed his comparatively short stay on Lighthouse Station, and he got the distinct feeling that time would soon be coming to an end, whether he liked it or not. By contrast, Jesse was visibly fuming beside him. As they approached the conclave, its main door now guarded by two strong-looking men, Nate laid a hand on Jesse's arm. "Let me do the talking." Jesse nodded reluctantly as they were ushered through.
"Urge you toward reason."
Elder Strong was speaking as they stepped into the conclave, but she broke off at the sight of them. The podium had been removed, replaced by chairs for each member of the council. Except Jesse. Rebus and Eden led them down the main aisle toward the council, which sat in a semicircle facing them, with two empty spaces. Looking awkward, Rebus and Eden hurried down the aisle to take their places in those empty chairs, leaving Nate and Jesse to walk the last few yards by themselves. Nate glanced over at Jesse and smiled crookedly, continuing to move at a dignified pace. The auditorium around them had fewer people in it than the last time they had gathered, but the mood was ugly. From Jesse's dark glances around, Nate suspected the crowd had been gathered a bit selectively. When he reached the dais, Nate stepped up onto the circular platform in the center of the room, directly across from the council, and promptly sat down cross-legged, facing them. Most looked a bit shocked as he did, evidently having expected him to remain standing like a criminal come for justice. Elder Jabin frowned thoughtfully, and Elder Strong's eyes widened and crinkled at the corners. She managed to suppress her smile, but it was a near thing. Jesse stood for a moment, looking around at the council with a mixture of confusion and hurt, hardening into a deep anger. As Jesse took a position beside Nate, also cross-legged, Jabin spoke. "Nate, we find that there is some question regarding your status, and we wish to make a formal inquiry." Rebus broke in. "How rapidly do you age, boy?" Jabin gave Rebus an annoyed look, and continued as smoothly as he could. "There are allegations that you're..." He paused uncomfortably. "An odd." Jabin's discomfort intensified, but he soldiered on. "There's also been suggestion that you're not, as claimed, the Bright Star." He trailed off, frowning at Nate. Nate nodded slowly, then shrugged. He looked Jabin in the eye. "I am who I am. You can call me whatever name you choose. It was the Keeper, your own leader, who gave me this." He held up the Sigil of Mysteries, which glowed softly even in the bright light of the auditorium. "Tell me, from where do you take the name Bright Star?" Surprisingly, it was Eden who spoke in response. "From the prophecies of the wild man, Seaver Radding." His eyes were fixed on Nate as he continued. "Many know of the prophecies of Radding given at the Telestry. We take the name Bright Star from his most famous prophecy. Darkness before you and chaos behind you. In hubris and weakness, the Bright Star will blind you." Eden looked at Nate hard as he continued. "What few know is that we too were given a sign when Radding pierced the veil upon his third rejection. The words have been preserved, passed down through the council and through my own family. They are not known widely, have never been spoken before a full session of the council, even. But they have been kept as surety against the day of the Bright Star's appearance." Eden paused, likely reciting in his own head. When he spoke again, he was obviously quoting long-rehearsed and oft-repeated memory. "Like a filing to the lodestone, the light of goodness draws him. His only home within the veil, an elder spring of truth and law. To the people he gives praise, and to the council respect and honor their due." As Eden finished, Rebus rose to his feet. He had obviously been waiting for the cue, because he pointed accusingly at Nate. "Disrespect. Disrespect is all you've shown the council. Elder spring of truth, fah! The drivel you spread among the people is as foul as you are, odd. Bright Star, you most certainly are not." Beside Nate, Jesse jumped to his feet.
You would defy my father so openly? When he returns...
Nate interrupted Jesse without seeming to raise his voice, but still driving past his outburst. Peace, Jesse. Nate shook his head slowly, then looked each member of the council in the eye in turn before he spoke. What exactly were you expecting? Am I too young? Too strange? He paused in thought, then shook his head again. No prophet is accepted in his own country. The wild man was rejected by the Telestry, not once but three times for giving them more truth than he gave to anyone else in the galaxy. Likewise, I gave you the truth more plainly than I may anywhere else, and you reject it. There were mutters from the audience behind Nate, and the council's faces grew, if possible, even more stony than they had before. Jabin shook his head in rejection. You defied the council directly, Nate. Bright Star, and your history lesson left more unrest among the people of Sanctuary than we've had in my entire lifetime. Nate rose to his feet. Though he was still shorter than any of them, seated as they were in their tall council chairs, Nate might have towered over them. Long after this universe is lost to memory, an unwelcome truth will still be the most potent insult it's possible for one person to offer another. Ancient lore from Earth itself tells you that wisdom loves correction. But a fool wants nothing more than to hear his own words in another's mouth. Rebus looked on the brink of speaking again, his face growing red, but Nate continued. The truth is that the people of Sanctuary lead the most privileged life in the galaxy. Because you're protected by the Veil, unopposed and unassailable, this council has become arrogant, even if your people are not. I paid you every respect you deserved. You cannot say the same about your treatment of me. Just as your prophecy says, I gave this council a come-down, exactly as you were due. It was the greatest gift I could offer you. Apparently Rebus could take no more. He broke in, yelling, "Take him!" With this utterance, Rebus' eyes changed, his pupils stretching into vertical slits. He stepped forward and stared into Nate's eyes, his voice dropping to a near whisper. I know what you are, Bright Star. Behind Nate, several people from the crowd rose up and stormed up the stairs, while Nate stood frozen, his gaze locked with Rebus's, his attention shattering. Rebus knew. Nate could see it in those exact eyes. He knew about both of Nate's worlds. He knew what Nate really was. Then Rebus' cronies were around Nate, seizing him by the arms and around the middle, hefting him easily above their heads. For a moment, Nate was afraid that they were going to actually tear him apart. He instinctively tried to seize Energemetra 6 to defend himself. His mind was stuck in the same paralysis that was so familiar to his body in that other reality. He could see Energemetra 6 as clearly as ever, but grasping it was so far beyond him in his shattered state, he didn't even know where to begin. He could no more use the fields than he could have done a handspring or even tied his own shoes in that other impossibly distant world. Terror and confusion enveloped him, as his helplessness struck home and he thrashed uselessly. "To the locks!" one of them yelled. There was a general roar of approval, and the whole mass started moving, carrying him along. From where he was held above the crowd, as if from a world away, Nate could see Jesse's mouth drop open in shock. He also caught a glimpse of Rebus's gloating sneer. As the crowd turned, now joined by others from the surrounding amphitheater, Nate heard Jabin trying to impose his voice over their roar without success. Nate's own shock at Rebus' revelation and a gut-wrenching feeling of failure prolonged his paralysis. The same four men held him over their heads, carrying him bodily through the station, while the rest of the mob forced gawkers out of their way. More than once, as the eternity of the next minute or two wore on, and a sense of unreality overcame his paralysis, Nate tried to use Energemetra 6 again, hoping to simply incapacitate the mob that carried him down the corridor. They were none too gentle, and the only thing he was certain of was that they were up to no good. If they were on their way to the airlock, as their words had suggested, that most likely meant another trip through the vacuum without gear. Over the time it took for the mob to reach the nearest airlock, on the opposite side of the station's hub from where Adamant was berthed, Nate struggled savagely against the wall that kept him from grasping the fields. Even as his shock wore off, something else stopped him. At first, he thought it was the same paralysis that had gripped him when Rebus had caught his eyes, and the same sense of horror and failure reached up to strangle him. Slowly, he realized it wasn't. He could see Energemetra 6. He had opened his senses to it. But something was stopping him from using it against these people. The realization of what that wall was came to him in a flash as they rounded the last corner, and he saw the airlock ahead of them. It was the great Schemic itself. With that realization, Nate's focus came clear, and his grasp of Energemetra 6 was instantaneous. His original instinct, to stop the mob that held him, was still impossible for him for reasons he couldn't quite understand. But he prepared himself for what he knew must be coming. When they reached the airlock, one of their number had run ahead to cycle it open, and they shoved him unceremoniously inside. Well, Nate thought, a little spacewalk isn't going to hurt me, whatever they might want. As the door was closing, he shaped the fields and, with his hand on the outside door, created a bubble around himself as quickly as he could, starting at his head and rapidly inflating to hold the rest of his body. This time he didn't have to create his own air, only envelope the air already around him to hold it as the airlock depressurized. He had barely finished when, a few seconds later, the door between him and the vacuum simply opened. Someone must have hit an emergency evacuation button, because the airlock hadn't cycled. The air was still inside the chamber, until suddenly it wasn't. The explosive decompression ripped Nate out of the airlock and tossed him into space, his bubble intact. The worst part was the tumble his ejection put on him. He was both spinning and slowly somersaulting head over heels, and he had to close his eyes as they disagreed violently with his inner ear about what to do with his last meal. It took a few precious seconds for him to recover his equilibrium and start using small body movements to counteract his tumble. Nate couldn't help the disorientation he had to fight, and it was a tremendous effort to maintain his little bubble of air. Still, being unprotected in the vacuum couldn't completely distract him from the raw majesty of the rainbow dust cloud, which seemed to hang just out of reach all around him. Nate's involuntary gasp of wonder was shockingly loud within his tiny bubble. Then his eyes caught a flash of fire from across the station, where Adamant was berthed. The entire station lurched, and Adamant shot away, wreckage from the station's docking clamps and umbilical tumbling in its wake. Nate chuckled darkly. Obviously, Andrew had heard what happened. As he watched, Adamant turned gracefully and came straight back toward the station. Then, after what must have been a hurried discussion among its pilots, straight toward him. As it approached, it occurred to Nate to wonder whether they could actually see him. He didn't want to wind up splattered across the front of the vessel. After thinking for a moment, Nate raised his hand and let loose a pulse of Energemetra 6, focused in a bright blue-white flash. Over the next few seconds, he repeated the flash several times, until it became obvious that Adamant was slowing to a stop in front of him. Another moment's thought led to a carefully crafted blast of air as a makeshift directional jet, adjusting Nate's trajectory toward Adamant's airlock. Then several more strategic blasts as he approached. Once he was at the airlock and able to grab a handhold, it took what felt like no time at all to pull himself inside and repressurize the lock. As he sagged inside the airlock, Nate's gorge rose again. He felt sicker than he'd have thought possible, considering that he hadn't actually been exposed to vacuum. As the air pressure rose around him, Nate finally released the bubble he'd been holding around himself with a gasp of relief. Containing a breathable bubble of air in a vacuum required tremendous energy, even without creating the air himself. When the inner airlock opened, he found John, Rachel, Shannon, Shauna, Laura, Keevan, and Ty all crowded around the hatch. their expressions ranging from enraged to anxious. As they caught sight of him, their expressions all relaxed. Nate grinned weakly, then pulled himself through the inner airlock and felt his body spasm. His neck and shoulder were afire again, too. When had that happened? If there had been gravity, Nate would have fallen. He gasped and doubled over, and his body made another attempt to empty the contents of his stomach. Nate somehow managed not to crash into anyone, but he felt hands on his back and shoulders, and he heard John exclaim,
"He's hurt. That's entropic shock."
Then a wash of power flowed through him, and the sickness and disorientation retreated. After a long, nauseous moment, he looked up into faces that were even more concerned than before, and shrugged. "How'd you know they were throwing me out?" Kevin sneered and waved his UPT in the direction of the station. "Those old buggers were bound to do something stupid like that. Jesse's on the comm. We should let him know we've got you here safe." He turned to stare at the airlock, facing back toward the station, his shoulders hunched, a confused mix of emotions playing across his face. Nate nodded faintly and reached out to push off the wall as they all headed for the bridge. By the time he got there, he was feeling almost normal, besides a bit of lingering nausea. Facing him on the window as he entered the bridge was a semi-transparent projection of Jesse. Upon seeing Nate, Jesse's eyes widened.
"Nate, you're okay?"
Nate smiled mirthlessly. "Seems like it."
"Well, I'm glad you're okay. It looked like they spaced you."
Jesse shook his head in obvious disgust. "They did," Nate said, his smile going crooked, still without humor. Jesse's forehead wrinkled and he grinned.
"Well, that's something."
Then he frowned.
"I should be out there with you."
He glanced around himself at whatever was outside the video pickup, his face stony.
"There's certainly nothing left for me here."
Nate's smile turned into a grin, and he raised his eyebrows. "Come on out, then." Jesse snorted. Then, seeing that Nate was serious, he blinked uncertainly.
"How did you..."
Nate nodded. "Make a bubble around yourself while you're still in the airlock. Might be hard to hold your focus, but the amulet will give you plenty of power." Jesse hesitated, and Nate grimaced. "We can't afford to hang out here long, and there's no way they'll dock us up again. Make your choice, Jesse Galton." Jesse returned his nod.
"I'm on my way."
He turned and the screen went black. Nate motioned to Andrew at the controls. "We need to get down there. Everybody strap in or at least grab onto something. Andrew, get us as close as you can without actually bumping them." They did have to strap in before Andrew maneuvered, but once they were secure, Nate went down to the airlock to receive Jesse. Sitting there in front of the closed lock, he opened his senses to the fields and focused. It hurt a little, probably from the entropic shock, but he managed. And when he tried, he could actually look through the airlock door. It was almost a full minute before he saw the airlock across from them open up, and he hissed. Jesse's bubble wasn't strong enough, and molecules of air were rushing through it like a strainer, each one clear to Nate's enhanced senses. As Nate watched, it flexed and started to distort. Nate set his hand against the corridor wall, and reaching out, he pushed against Jesse's bubble, where it was deforming, using his own concentration to help Jesse steady himself. There was a moment when nothing changed, but then Jesse's bubble stabilized and tightened, and Nate felt him push off toward Adamant's airlock. A few seconds later, the airlock began to cycle. Jesse was gasping, as Nate had been when the airlock opened, but Nate thought it was more from terror than entropic shock. Over the next few seconds, Jesse's breathing went back to normal, and everyone, Ty, Shannon, and Kevin had come down to see what was going on, headed back for the bridge. After they were settled into their seats, they all just looked at each other, taking time to assess their situation. It was Jesse who finally broke the silence.
"Thank you all, and particularly thank you, Nate."
He looked uncomfortable.
"I should have been able to handle that bubble. It was within my power. Guess I could use some practice."
Nate nodded with a genuine smile. "You're welcome." Andrew stretched in his chair and leaned over to look at Nate.
The question is, what now?
Rachel was staring at Lighthouse Station, tightly controlled rage behind her eyes.
I just want to poke holes in that tin can. If only there weren't innocent people over there.
John grunted and laid a hand on her arm.
But there are, Rach.
Rachel nodded sharply, and the two shared a look. Nate glanced through the window at the space station and sighed. It's a good question. We probably shouldn't hang around here, though. I'd rather not wait for Rebus to come up with another stupid idea. For the first time, a sharp prickle of anger hit Nate, but he shook his head, pushing it away. Jesse smiled darkly.
Rebus is in trouble. He didn't have the Council's approval for what he did, even without me there to keep an eye on him.
Nate snorted. Not surprising. Maybe the others will have the backbone to hold him accountable. I still don't have any particular interest in hanging around. Anybody else? Nate raised an eyebrow and looked around the bridge to see universal headshakes from everyone. Ty grinned.
So what's next? Are you going after the Dominion?
Nate snorted again, but he didn't answer directly. Instead, he turned to Andrew. How are we for supplies? There are 10 of us now. Andrew shook his head.
Air and water are fine, but we'll need food. We should have enough salvage left to trade for whatever we need, if we can find a place that will accept it.
He looked around to see if the others had anything to contribute. After a moment, Jesse said,
We have to get out of the Vial first.
Nate looked thoughtful, then his mouth quirked ironically. I think I can fix that problem. He got out of his chair and left the bridge. A short while later, he returned, carrying the crystal globe from his room. Several sets of eyes widened, and Jesse sucked in a sharp breath.
You can't. I mean, please, take some time to think about this.
Nate sent Jesse a hard stare, as the prickle of anger returned even stronger. Oh, I have, Jesse. Then he forced himself to let the anger go, and sighed. Do you really think the protection Sanctuary has been under is beneficial without the Keeper to shepherd people in and out of the Vale? Jesse blinked, opening his mouth to reply, then closed it again. Nate shook his head. There will never be a good time for this, but your people have been isolated for too long. Even if your father were still here, this state of affairs can't go on forever. We can't really protect people from the universe. We can only prepare them to face it. And I saw how many energemetrists you have aboard Lighthouse. Do you really think they can't defend themselves against pirates? Jesse sighed and shook his head.
They're really not gonna like it.
His mouth twisted wryly.
You might be right, though. Maybe it's time for Sanctuary to rejoin the rest of the universe. And the Telestry, too.
Ty laughed darkly at that. But Nate ignored him, grasping Energemetra 6 and feeling for the channels inside the globe. Then he nudged them into reverse. For a few heartbeats, nothing happened, but soon the globe began to glow and pulse brilliantly in the visible spectrum. Nate opened his senses to the fields and gasped. The crystal looked like a hole in space, sucking in a tremendous amount of Energemetra 6 from all around them, and the flow was actually increasing. It was more Energemetra 6 than any of them could handle, even with the amulets, flowing into the globe every second. They all stared at the artifact, marveling at it, before Jesse spoke.
Now we really need to leave. Lighthouse Station is armed. If they figure out what you're doing, they may fire on us.
Nate nodded and looked to Andrew. Let's get clear of Sanctuary. Head for the Dust Cloud. I have no idea how long this is going to take, but you can bet it won't be fast. The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And that concludes Chapter 8 of The Veil of Mysteries. I appreciate everybody being here. We will catch you all in a couple of weeks, and be sure to tune in next week as well. We will have Chapter 9 available then, God willing. Thank you, Mel. Thank you, Luke, oldest and third. Appreciate it, everybody. Thank you all to all of our listeners, and hope you have a great week.